Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome. It is wonderful to be in your company this afternoon. It is Wednesday. It is just after 2 o'clock, 2:10 coming up in a moment. And here we are, day after Tisha B'Av. And it is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. If you can hear us a little clearer, it's because of the great innovation of a great new transmitter that Chai FM has. And I think it was just in time, kind of used for the first time, I think, yesterday. And for the very first time being used to play real music. Over the last few weeks, we have had the kind of inconvenience of having to listen to only a cappella music. And here, I'm sure you heard those musical instruments in the song coming through loud and clear, and it speaks volumes about the period of time that we are actually in right now. As we speak, we have just emerged from the 3 weeks. We have just emerged from the 9 days. We have just gotten over Tisha B'Av, although it does leave some kind of a lasting effect. And we have just gone out of the first part of the 10th day of Av, which is also partially observed as part of the 9 days and part of the 3 weeks, because in the year 69, when the temple, the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, was destroyed by the Romans, they set fire to it. It burnt, and it continued to burn through the 10th, not only on the 9th, and there were some who felt that actually the day when the temple was finally in ruins, that it should be the day of fasting and the day of sadness, not when it began, because seriously, at any time, God could have put a stop to the flames, to the fires. He could have turned it all around. It need not have happened. But once it was destroyed, that was the time for the mourning. And there were those who said, no, we have to look at the arrow that was fired rather than the damage that it was caused. And that was all done on the 9th of Av. But be that as it may, we fast on the 9th, sometimes on the 10th, when Tisha B'Av falls out on a Shabbat, on a Shabbos, we do fast on the 10th of Av. And so there's a kind of a cloud that hangs over the first part of the day. But for all intents and purposes, that is all behind us. At midday, classical midday, halachic midday, which was about 12 minutes past 12 today, that all went into the past, and now we are in the present and looking forward to the future. We have to just bear in mind for this introduction that today is also the day that marked in 1994 the bombing that took place of the Jewish Community Center, the AMIA, in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, which killed 86 people and wounded more than 300. A lethal, brutal attack that happened then. And of course, it kind of pales in comparison to what happened in on October the 7th. That we have all been living with for the last 3/4 of a year, we still got to remember that 86 people lost their lives in that Argentina attack outside of Israel, just because it was a Jewish center. We also have to think perhaps of the fact, and this perhaps a little more poignant in what we've been going through this year, that, in fact, the expulsion from Gaza in 2005 took place officially on this day, on the 10th of Av. I think there's a nasty kind of sense of, not a sense of humor, it's not funny at all, but more than 8,500 Jewish residents were forcibly expelled from their homes in 25 towns and settlements in the Gaza Strip, which included 16 settlements in what was known as Gush Katif, flourishing Gush Katif belt, where a tremendous amount of fruit, vegetables, and so on were grown. It also was the expulsion from the northern Shomron. It all took place on the 10th of Av in 2005 as part of the Israeli government's ill-fated disengagement plan. It was the deadline today that was set by the government for all Jews to leave their homes and to leave those areas. And over the next couple of days, tens of thousands of soldiers and police officers began the forceful removal of the thousands who refused to leave willingly. So, of course, there were those who left of their own accord. There were those who had to be removed. And the removal of all Jewish residents from Gush Katif and the Gaza Strip was actually completed by the 17th of Av, a week from today. It took them a week to complete that. And from northern Shomron a day later. The army completed its withdrawal from these areas on the 8th of Elul after bulldozing all the hundreds of homes and civic buildings in the settlements. And the Jewish dead were actually disinterred and removed from the cemeteries, and only the shuls were left standing. Now, the government hoped, of course, that the disengagement would open new opportunities in relation with the Palestinian Arabs, but they were bitterly disappointed, because no sooner had the last Israeli soldiers left the Gaza Strip than the Arab mobs began looting, desecrating, torching the shuls, and the vacated settlements became the staging grounds, of course, for terrorist attacks against Israel. The unremitting rocket fire to Sderot and to all the surrounding areas, and of course, need we say, the launch pad for October the 7th, 19 years ago on this day. That was the day on which that tragically sad decision was made, and the whole disengagement plan that led to all of this strife and difficulty and problematic politicized difficulties that the Jewish people have faced over the last 9-10 months all began actually on this day 19 years ago. If we fast forward a little bit and we think about a couple of days' time, the famous disputation of Nachmanides took place actually on the 12th of Av, and this was by the order of King James I of Aragon in Spain. Nachmanides, who was Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, 1194 to 1270 was his life. He was compelled to participate in a public debate. It was held at the king in the king's presence, and against the Jewish convert to Christianity. His name was Pablo Cristiani. The Ramban's defense of Judaism and its refutations of Christianity served as the basis of many such future disputations through the generations. And because of the victory, it was, of course, an insult to the king's religion. Nachmanides was forced to flee from Spain. He came to Jerusalem, where he found just a handful of Jewish families living in poverty, and he revived the Jewish community there. And the shul he built in the old city is in use today, and is perhaps the oldest standing shul in the whole world. Now, in juxtaposition to that, just think about this, for those who want synchronicity in the history. Today was the day in 1940 that Agudas Chassidei Chabad, the Chabad Lubavitch Community Representative Organization, bought a building called 770 Eastern Parkway. Yes, it happened. On the 10th of Av in 1940, it was there to house the living quarters, the study and the office, the yeshiva, synagogue of the Lubavitcher Rebbe of the time, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, who had arrived in New York following his rescue from Warsaw, from Nazi-occupied Warsaw, some 5 months before that. And it served, of course, as the headquarters of Chabad Lubavitch, as it still does today, for the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. And it continues to be the kind of foundation stone of Chabad activities throughout the world. If we go forward to this coming Shabbat, it is Shabbat Nachamu, it is the Shabbos of comfort, the beginning of the seven comforting Haftarot that are read, and of course Parshiot, and of course the whole period of time. Seven plays three, and that means that the comfort is more than double. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. Against the three weeks of difficulty that we've just been through, we come to the seven Shabboses of comfort, of consolation. And of course, the consolation is always much greater than the difficulties, the problems, the issues. The light will always outshine the darkness.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Perhaps what we need to do, though, as we leave the 3 weeks behind, is to look at what comes up next on the Jewish calendar. And so, of course, on Judaism 101.9 here with Rabbi Michael Katz, we are going to explore what is coming next, what happens after the 3 weeks? Well, first of all, the 3 weeks is, as we mentioned yesterday, an essential time, actually, for us all to go through and to think about and to contemplate, to understand the fact that life is not all about grand, wonderful, celebratory events. Life actually is a conglomeration of different things. There are the times when there is bright light and music and dancing, and there are times when one has to introspect a little bit and one has to think about what one is missing, and one has to look at those things that are missing and try and overcome them and try and replace them, and one has to take the dark and the difficult times in our lives and we have to brighten them, and we have to bring light into them, and we have to spend time thinking about how we can fix that which is cracked, broken, difficult. And so once we have been through the 3 weeks, we hopefully have come out with some solutions. We've come out with some positive energy to say, well, you know, that is not going to define us. We're not going to be defined by death, dying, depression, sadness, destruction. We're going to be defined rather by the way we pick up the pieces, the way we put things back together again, the way we overcome that darkness and those difficulties, and the way we look at those things that we have lost and make sure that we can replace them. And so the focus of each and every one of us now has to be forward-looking rather than backward-looking. And as we look forward to the next few days, to the Shabbat of Nachamu, as we mentioned before the break, and the beginning of the 7 weeks of consolation. Yes, it's tough to think about, hard to think about the fact that it is 7 weeks of consolation, and then it is Rosh Hashanah. It is quite an eye-opener, if ever there was one, or sort of a little bit of a shake to understand that we're nearing the middle of the month of Av, and there is one more Rosh Chodesh, which will be Elul in a couple of weeks' time, and then it's into the month of Elul, and then Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and so on. And as we look at those things, there are a number of important things that come between now and then, and one of them is coming up next week on Monday. It is the 15th of Av, otherwise known as Tu B'Av or Chamisha Asar B'Av. Several things happened on this day. Now, we've mentioned it before here on Judaism 101.9, dates that were founded in the desert, you know, the period of time when we spent 40 years in the desert and we had left Egypt and we were on our way to Israel. Those fundamental seminal moments in the desert became the foundation stones of everything that happened in Judaism afterwards. As we mentioned yesterday, and was obviously mentioned many times in a shul near you by Rabbi, who you perhaps were listening to, or shiurim that you were listening to online, the report of the spies coming back from Israel, the fact that we didn't want to go into Israel, the fact that Jews sat and that they mourned and bemoaned their fate, that here God had taken us out of Egypt and brought us into a desert to die in the desert. It was like a terrible, terrible vibe that there was in the Jewish people on that date. And that was Tisha B'Av. That was the Tisha B'Av in the desert. And then Hashem says, well, if you don't want to go there, you won't go there. It's okay. You know, that's what you want. And we therefore wandered in the desert for the balance of those 40 years for all of those who had cried to actually perish, to leave the Jewish people year after year. In fact, we're told that it all happened on Tisha B'Av, a grisly reminder of every year of that fact that we had no belief, that we had no faith, that we didn't think that we were actually going to get to Israel, and we thought it was going to be this land that would swallow us alive and the giants who would crush us like grasshoppers. All of that feeling was how Tisha B'Av became embedded in the Jewish people in the desert. But then it all came to an end. Those 40 years did end. And the people still thought that there were some more people who had to die, that the plague or the difficulty or the problems were not over yet. And so each year they prepared for Tisha B'Av as they had in the past. And in the last year, they were prepared to die. And those who thought that they were going to, thought that they would, but when they realized as they woke up the next morning that nobody had died, they were somewhat encouraged, but perhaps not sure whether they had maybe miscalculated the dates, and they prepared again the next day and the next day and the next day, until eventually they saw a full moon. And when they saw that full moon, they gazed at that full moon, they realized that the plague, the decree, was over, that no more dying would take place. And so the 15th of Av comes as this mark of the fact that there will be no more death. It's like a redemption kind of a day. There'll be no more death. There'll be no more dying. There's no more punishment. There is no more difficulty. There is no more of the horrible feeling of not being able to have our Holy Land and not have Israel as the people were thinking then, all those years ago. And this all happened in the year 1274, before the Common Era, where the death, the dying in the desert, ceased. And it had happened after these 40 years of wandering in the desert. It was actually pinned to the date of the 15th of Av, which comes up on this coming or next Monday, Sunday night and Monday, 15th of Av. And so we mark the day by not saying Tachanun, by not saying penitential prayers. It is a Geula, redemption kind of a day. But there were several other things that happened on this day throughout history, as it became embedded as a day of redemption, as a day of breaking down of the bans, as a day of the removal of those restrictive orders that placed us under the order of death, unfortunately, in the desert. Those who had worshipped the golden calf and those who had followed the spies' evil report, their bad report on Israel. And then much later in the 13th century, before the Common Era, there had been a ban on intertribal marriage. Now, this was in order to ensure the orderly division of Israel between the 12 tribes. We read it in the parashas over the last couple of weeks. Restrictions had been placed on marriages between members of two different tribes. A woman who'd inherited tribal land from her father was forbidden to marry out of her tribe, lest her children, members of their father's tribe, cause the transfer of land from one tribe to another by inheriting her estate. And this, of course, is spelled out in the parasha that we read last week. This ordinance was binding only on the generation that conquered and settled the Holy Land during the 14-year period of 2488 to 2503, those first generational times, the first 30-odd years from our people coming into Israel. From if we think about it in terms of the civil calendar, it's 1273 to 1258 of the Common Era. And when that restriction was lifted on the 15th of Av, this event was a cause of celebration and festivity. So the removal of the ban of intermarriage between the tribes, you know, often say it, but it's difficult enough for people to find shidduchim, to find marriage partners. Could you imagine if that was multiplied by 12? If you could only marry within your tribe, it was very restrictive. It was very difficult. And actually, it was something that came about because people couldn't sort out their business dealings. And it's probably a very, very good recipe for the fact that there shouldn't be marriage where you can't sort out the finances. This became a day. They chose the date of the 15th of Av for the lifting of this ban as well, and now intermarriage between the tribes was once again allowed. There also happened on the 15th of Av something else that had to do with marriage between tribes, and that was the tribe of Benjamin had not exactly coated themselves in glory in an event that was called or known as the Pelegesh Begiva, the concubinate Giva. It's related in the book of Judges, in the book of Shoftim 19 to 21, where the 15th of Av was the day on which the tribe of Binyamin, who had been excommunicated because of the behavior at the incident of the concubine of Giva, what had happened there was a woman had been abused, she'd been raped, and no one had been found responsible, but they knew that it was something to do with the tribe. It happened in the tribe of Benjamin's sphere of influence, and therefore the entire tribe was put into some kind of a harem. They were excommunicated for their behavior, and no one was allowed to intermarry, marry the guys from the tribe of Benjamin. This event occurred during the judgeship of Otniel ben Kenaz, who led the people of Israel in the years 2533 to 2573 or 1228 to 1188 before the Common Era. So once again, the removal of a restriction, the removal of a ban, and this is kind of what this day is, the removal of these restrictive orders, the restrictive order against the Jewish people in the desert, the restrictive order against intermarriage between the tribes, and then the restrictive order between the other tribes and the tribe of Benjamin, tribe of Benjamin, to whom marriage was not permitted. These were all removed on the 15th of Av. Now, some other barriers were removed on the 15th of Av. Yerovam removed the roadblocks in 574 before the Common Era. Now, what happened here was something very odd. Upon the division of the Holy Land into the two kingdoms, following the death of Shlomo HaMelech, of King Solomon, Yerobam ben Nevat, who was the ruler of the breakaway northern kingdom of Israel, set up roadblocks to prevent his citizens from making the pilgrimage three times a year to Yerushalayim. Our Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, which were the capital of the southern kingdom of Judea. Amazingly, he set them up, and they stood for 200 years. And 200 years later, Hoshea ben Eliah, the last king of the northern kingdom, removed them once again on the 15th of Av in 3187 or 574 before the Common Era. Isn't it amazing that, if people don't attack us or do crazy things to us from the outside, we take care of it from ourselves from the inside, that there was this division, that there was this disparity, and to the extent that the northern kingdom would not allow its people to come to the south, to go to Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, to the holy city of Jerusalem. And the amazing thing was that it was unresolved for 200 years, when eventually those barriers were removed, and once again there could be the free flow of spiritual traffic to Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. It was also a day, the 15th of Av, if you look it up, a day of matchmaking. Now, people often confuse this, and they sort of label this as the Jewish Valentine's Day. Nothing really could be further from the truth. It's not that at all. But it was a custom on the 15th of Av that it says in the Talmud that the daughters of Yerushalayim would go out in borrowed white linen garments and dance in the vineyards. And whoever didn't have a wife could go there and find himself a bride. This is what the Talmud in Tainus 31a tells us. So what it was this day on which marriages were reallowed. It was a day of the breaking down of barriers, taking away the difficulties, the problems, the issues of Jewish boys meeting Jewish girls, of shidduchim taking place. And so the way it was celebrated was the women would go out and dance. Now, they were very careful not to insult each other. The rich girls would give their dresses to the poor girls. And so nobody knew who was rich and who was poor. And there were all sorts of instructions that were issued to the men of how to pick a bride, how a woman should be an Isha Yirat Hashem. She should rather be a God-fearing woman than having the diamonds and jewelry and being bedecked in beautiful clothing, because that is Sheker Achein Vevel Ayofi. That is, as King Solomon tells us, that physical, external coverings, outside beauty is not everything. That's not all that it's about. It's about the Yirat Hashem. It's about the mishpacha, the family, the lineage, the heritage. That is so much more important. And this was all spelled out for us on this day of the reintroduction of marriages throughout the history of the Jewish people. And that was the day, the 15th of Av, of beautiful marriages to take place. It was once again the opportunity of emphasizing the importance of marriage, the importance of family from a Jewish perspective, from a Jewish point of view. And we'll be back after this with a little bit more.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Rabbi Michael Katz here with you with Judaism 101.9. And we are talking about upcoming days, and especially the date of Chamisha Asar B'Av, Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, which comes up next week, Monday. It was known as the day of Shidduchim, the day of matchmaking. It was the time that all these difficult things of the past came to an end. The death of the people in the desert, the 40 years preparing to come into Israel. It was also the day, by the way, on which the dead of Beitar were allowed to be buried. Beitar was the last fortress, the last holdout of the Bar Kokhba revolt, when Beitar fell on the 9th of Av in 133 of the Common Era. Bar Kokhba and many thousands of Jews were killed. The Romans massacred the survivors of the battle with great cruelty, and they wouldn't allow the Jews to bury their dead. And for 15 years, the remains of those Jews remained scattered in the battlefield. When the dead of the Beitar were finally brought to burial on the 15th of Av in 148 of the Common Era, an additional blessing, Hatov HaMeitiv, was added to the grace after meals. Did you know that? In commemoration, Hatov HaMeitiv, a special prayer added because of the burial of the Jews of Beitar, added to our tefillot, to our daily prayers, and particularly in our Birkat HaMazon, in our benching, in our grace after meals. And finally, it was a day of the breaking of the axe. Now, what happened here was when the Holy Temple stood in Jerusalem, the annual cutting of firewood for the altar was concluded on the 15th of Av. Now, this happened year after year. This event was celebrated with feasting and rejoicing, as is the custom upon the conclusion of a holy endeavor, like a siyum, and it included a ceremonial breaking of the axes, which gave the day its name. So, because it is the middle of the summer, in the hot climes in the north, this was the day on which they stopped the cutting of the wood, because going then into a cooler season and a time of rain, etc., 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 and the wood would not have been as good from the 15th of Av onwards. And so it was the day on which that ceremony took place, terminating the cutting of the wood for the altar in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if we think about all of these things, it is a time of the end of not only the axes falling, time of the end of gzeiros, of decrees against our people. And we think about it then as a backdrop to our lives in general. There is something in our DNA which has to do with everybody else, with the whole Jewish people, with Israel. The fact that it's a day on which marriages were reallowed in Israel affects us even today. It's in our blood. It's in our DNA. It's in our very being. And it's a time. It's not only about our mazal being good out there. It's not only about the atmosphere changing in the world. It's about something within ourselves that fundamentally changes. And this all happens after these 3 weeks. So once we've gone through a time of this difficulty and we've processed that all, we can now move to a time where innately and from within ourselves, we have the ability to not only smile again, to dance again, to listen to music again, to be happy again. And it is something of a prayer that we say today and that we think about now, because there are unfortunately so many people in Israel, and when we think about those who have lost loved ones, and we think about the hostages, and we think about all the difficulties that families are going through and that people are going through right now as we speak, there is a need, a necessity, for us to spiritually, I guess, up the atmosphere, the pH, make things into a time of simcha, to show and to demonstrate that we can go on, that we will go on, that we will overcome, that we will be triumphant, and that hopefully all those sorrows will come to an end, and they'll be replaced by great joy, great merry simcha, which is the very, very life of Judaism. And particularly our Torah's fundamental commandment that we should be besimcha, we should be joyous at all times.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
One of the things that the 15th of Av is also notable for is that it is the day that, as we said, marks the kind of midsummer in the Northern Hemisphere, and therefore the nights are going to start getting a little longer and the days a little shorter. Of course, this is counterintuitive. It's the exact opposite here as we sit below the equator. But be it as it may, in the Northern Hemisphere, where the majority of Jews reside, and particularly in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, it is a day on which the nights start to get longer. Now, when the nights start to get longer, it only means, from a Jewish point of view, that there's more time for Torah study. You have a little less time of daylight hours of work and a little bit more time to sit and to study Torah. And so it became the date that marked an increase in Torah study. And it is something that, as we know, promotes Simcha. You know, on Tisha B'Av yesterday, one of the things that we were restricted from was Torah study. Don't study Torah, because it introduces, it brings, it elevates a person in a way of great Simcha. So in order to increase in our Simcha, in order to increase in our joy, which we now need to show after Tisha B'Av, we need to get into a little bit more Torah study. And so from the 15th of Av, which is from Monday, it would be a good idea to add, even though, as we said, our nights are getting longer and the days, our nights are getting shorter and our days getting longer because we are moving in the opposite direction. However, it's a wonderful thing to keep in sync with Jews all over the world, and particularly in Israel, and increase in our Torah study. This creates Simcha, this brings Simcha. So hopefully we can make all sorts of other wonderful simchas, whether it is shidduchim, it's marriages, whether it's bar mitzvahs or it's prison, whether it is birthdays and happy occasions, whether it's just getting together with friends. And perhaps it's a time to break down all the barriers between ourselves and others, and the barriers between ourselves and simcha. And sometimes there are barriers between ourselves and simcha, and we need to make sure that we take those barriers, we break them down, just like they were in the story of Yerovam, in the story of the breaking down of the barriers of marriage between the tribes, in the story of the breaking down of destroying of the axes, which was something, you know, I guess it's bearing the hatchet. That's probably where the saying actually comes from. And to do that by increasing in joy. Simcha is the greatest barrier breaker. It is the greatest thing to bring joy into our lives. And that is what this coming week and the days ahead are truly all about. So we want to wish you a great Shabbat up ahead. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a beautiful Chamisha Asar B'Av coming up next week, and I look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week on Wednesday for an opportunity to spend some time thinking about what's going on in Judaism 101.9.